It is better to be asked to take a higher position than to be told to give your place to someone more important. Well, where are the best seats? I think we could discuss that for some time. What I remember is a saying in a comic I used to read in my teens called Mad Magazine, and it said the saying, "Fools rush in and get the best seats." Not fools rush in where angels and you and I might fear to tread. When I was wee and the circus came to town, there was a lot of discussion in the playground about where the best seats were. The circus that came to our town wasn't a big one, it was a small travelling circus. And the more expensive seats were the one closer to the ring, and they were more expensive because they were upholstered in the sense that they had carpet nailed onto the planks where you sat. I think they were a bit more comfortable. But they were closer to the ring. Now, close up to the ring in a circus isn't always the best thing, because clowns can get out of control and squirt water at you. And the animals sometimes are not as well behaved as they might be, as I'm sure some of us know. So is the best seat about four rows back, where you get a good view over the top of everybody else and you're far enough away from anything that's thrown one way or another? A superior view might well be from a higher level. Certainly for a sporting fixture, it might be. A good seat in the stand near the director's box might be the place to go. But for a boxing match, maybe the ringside would be desirable. Maybe not for wrestling, of the sort of wrestling that I remember, where people were getting thrown out of the ring all the time and you could easily get a big fellow landing on your lap. My wife and I went once to a performance of King Lear at the General Assembly. I remember it vividly. It had a wonderful cast with Timothy West, Patrick Moore. And we had arrived late. I don't remember if we had tickets, but there used to be a servitor from university called Charlie Fraser who was at the Assembly Hall during the festival. And I saw him and he said, "Come up here." And he showed us into seats right beside the platform, the thrust stage that was put up there. And we sat down there. And then the cast came in and sat down beside us. We had a wonderful, that was a ringside seat that was really valuable, because we had these actors coming on and off the stage and sitting, not all the time, but during the course of the action, and actually sitting beside us, pouring, I may say, with sweat, because they were putting so much into performance. Also, of course, the organ gallery in the Usher Hall was always popular, because although the seats are uncomfortable where the choir sit, if you're there, you get a splendid view of the conductor and the orchestra. So where the best seat might be debatable. Jesus is speaking about the seating at a dinner, where the most important people will be seated, depending on how the thing was arranged, either in the center or at the top of a table that you would eat from. And the problem of a seating plan will be very familiar to wedding organizers. For social, family, or diplomatic reasons, rather than those just spectating, where you put people together around the table at a wedding might guarantee success or something less. And I remember Ian Gilmer coming back from a wedding when I was his understudy at Drylaw, and he had a piece of cake with him that he'd brought to share with us. It was quite a substantial chunk. And it was made from a cake that had depicted the top table at the wedding. And there was a little minister sleeping at the end. I've seen that repeated in other occasions. I never got one, but Ian was really tickled with this. And he shared it with us at coffee time. The minister doesn't have to be at the top table and he doesn't have to be asleep. But that was the impression of the cake. It's another illustration of where we might think the best seats might be, not necessarily the most prestigious or preeminent, but the ones that afford the best, what, view? Or maybe it's the one that nearest the kitchen so that the food is warmer, unless, of course, they come out from the kitchen with the food and start the way over there and then work their way back. Or it might be nearest the door because you want to make a quick getaway, handy for the exit, or perhaps the toilet. The message of today's gospel is another one about the way to God's kingdom. In his parables, Jesus provides observations of life, scenes and events from what people would understand every day. And last Sunday, we explored the illustration of the narrow door. I was talking about buses. I think you'll probably remember that more than you remember what Jesus said about aiming for the narrow door. I hope not. But he was saying the way to heaven is not easy, and go in by the narrow door. Don't look for the big entrance. And this is about a big entrance as well, if you think you're important enough to fight your way in and get the best seat. Issues that Jesus raises present various criticisms of human behavior about folk made him angry because of their presumption of entitlement or privilege. Folk only too ready to say, "Don't you know who I am?" And you probably know the story about that. So who should get the VIP treatment? We know that in today's society there are far too many media celebrities and very few real ones. And note that in the narrative here, Jesus is being watched by his critics. People were watching Jesus closely. These were critical enemies. Did the watchers actually notice what he does? Or are they looking to see what he doesn't do? Or what he does at the wrong time? Or in the rest of this chapter, on the wrong day? Do these watchers see themselves as Jesus sees them? Are the leading Pharisees going to be among those jostling for position at this banquet? The contemporary English Bible version of this story heads the paragraph, "How to be a guest." The Good News text version is headed, "Humility and Hospitality." But the story contrasts humility and humiliation. Humiliation of embarrassment for the presumptuous who have to be asked to move for somebody more important. This is, of course, a stage beyond the issue of gaining admission, which was involved in the narrow door. There the door was shut, remember, and the would-be diners were told that they were not recognized by the host. They were turned away. Here the message is to beware. Beware of assuming that a place for you is reserved at the top table or at the top of the table. Beware of thinking that status entitles you to a special place and it's there for you. Do not forget that the host is the one who bestows the favor. So while today there may be a seating plan and a place with your name on it, in those days of Jesus' experience, the giver of the feast has the full say about who sits where. This isn't just an encouragement to have good table manners. It isn't even an instruction to know your place. The humility which Jesus enjoins upon those who hear him has nothing to do with low self-esteem or submission to class or economic pressure. It isn't about self-abasement, but about recognition of others. Others deserve the recognition that you seek yourself. Other folk around you may deserve or be entitled. the consideration. I've just remembered another story. On the way into St. Michael's Church in Dumfries, there is a very old tombstone, which is in good condition because it was restored sometime in the early part of the last century by, I think, the Burns Federation, who were restoring tombs. And it's a memorial to a provost. And it's in Latin, and then it goes into a verse that says, at the minute, King James at first me bailey named, the Lord then since me provost claimed. God hast for me in crown reserved, for king and country have I served. Now, if that's not presumption, I don't know what is. It wouldn't be so bad if it was in the third person, but it's a claim. So I wonder if Francis Irvine, that was his name, I wonder if Francis Irvine wrote that himself. In my internet research, I found a poem from an American blogger that I want to share with you. It's called The Parable of the Dinner Party. She entered the party like a caped queen, her heels lifting herself up to thinner air, almost to where she wanted to be. She saw the table spread with boutique finery, charcuterie and artisanal cheeses and duck liver patty, red and white and bubbling wine for everyone. She approached the gathering and saw on the far end the out-of-fashioned, the rough-handed, and the wrong-spoken, the servants and migrants who picked the buttered lettuce. On the near end, she saw the well-abled suits, handbags with leather and metal clasps, that look of confidence in the eyes of the highly educated. She saw one chair near her with those of her kind. She sat and mingled and sipped wine and laughed controllably, and knew which fork to use for the appetizer. The host came and thanked her for taking the seat at this end and assured her, warm-voiced, that someday she too could join him at the other end. I thought that was too good to pass. And it contains this element of people like us. Because when we think about this sort of thing, we're actually looking to associate ourselves with people we know or people we think are people like us. Whereas Jesus' message is, all people are like us because we are like all people. There are just variations. We can talk about the variations another day. You can be sure that Jesus will want to. There's another story that came to my mind in connection with this banquet. And it's the allegory of the long spoons. I can't remember when I first heard it. It's a very long story. It's about the people who are sitting round waiting to be fed, and the spoons are so long in the handle that they cannot be manipulated. And so the only answer to eating is that you feed the person opposite you. Now that is an act of sharing that makes sure everybody is fed. By sharing, everyone is recognized and everyone is of equal importance. Other people matter. So I'd like to close by thinking again about this idea of recognition and the part it plays in this parable, as it did in the other, where the host said to those he denied a welcome, I do not know you. The host in this Sunday story recognizes the humble guest that he will then conduct to the higher place than that which was first chosen. The generous host bestows the favor of recognition. And I think that we should all recognize ourselves, that we have to try harder to exercise some of that divine control in that divine perspective. we should try harder to be the recognizers, to be the encouragers. I know that some of you are good at this already, at spotting in other people the things that need to be recognized for the good they have done, or the good they are trying to do in their lives, in their family, or in their community, and just recognize it. Not by a round of applause, necessarily, but by a pat on the back. A word that lets them know they've been noticed. Something that says, we understand what challenges might be faced, what small victories or achievements might mean that deserve praise or simply acknowledgement. So where a gesture or a word of support, of confirmation or affirmation or thanks might make a difference, or might confer even a minor honor, then truly blessing is shared. And I think that's the important thing here. We need not to be not like the people who struggle for the best place. We need to be like the host who confers the recognition, the honor, and the privilege. When that happens, blessing will be shared, and then we will have a clearer vision of God's kingdom. Amen.